The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Wife totally messed me up by calling me at the beginning, and it totally threw me off my game. All right, I didn't react to the defense well.
Don't blame it on that. Don't blame it on that. We'll check the game tape. You were off your game even before.
Oh, baby, that's right. We're all off our game here, baby. It's COVID-19 special unbuttoned podcast. I mean, hey, we're all playing road games right now. That's the way it is. Ahmed Farid, Chris Sims. It's a Thursday afternoon. We're a week away from the draft, and guess what? We're going to talk more about the draft because that's what we freaking do. What's up, dude?
Really?
How you doing, man? Yeah.
How's it going, Chris? Yeah, you're right. We're all playing home games, but it's like the road games. I was doing that new show with Tirico on Monday, Lunch Talk Live. He had me on for a segment. I was super excited about it, and I have like my IFB in, my lights on, my camera's all set up, and then immediately once we come on air, my cord starts falling out of my head. My light falls down. I'm just like, man, we're not built for this whole thing.
No, we're definitely not. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's just another sign of you choking under the pressure. I mean, everything was good, and then they said action, and it just all fell apart. I mean,
I know.
Dude, I'm just not sure about you in the clutch. We got to see more evidence.
I've always been that way. Like, when you ratchet up the pressure, I do get a little sweaty. I get a little sweaty under the armpits, and stuff can fall apart. But we do. We've put you to the task this whole month. You have been just looking at game tape, ignoring your family under quarantine the entire month of the past 30 plus days. We're going to look at what defensive tackle rankings, your top five there, along with linebacker rankings. We're also going to react to the cornerbacks. People got some things to say about you with your top five and top five safeties as well. A couple of reactions there. But first, before we get into that, can we talk about the Browns and their new jersey? Because I feel like you and I have become kind of the unofficial jersey police here. We've thrown ourselves into that role. Neither of us were high on the Browns' old look, but they have changed, and they have basically, Chris, gone back to the future. So their old look is on top, and their old look is on the bottom, which is now their new look. And I must say, I like it. I'm a fan of simplifying the look.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, those uniforms on the top, I mean, that's shitty looking. I don't know what else anybody wants me to say. And, you know, I know we're similar ages. When we grew up, you know, the uniform we're seeing now Cleveland Browns unveil is the one that we watch. But I watched Bernie Kosar back in the day with Ernest Biner and Marty Schottenheimer as the head coach and, you know, Clay Matthews playing outside linebacker. They wore white on white on the road, and when they were home, they wore their white pants with their brown jerseys. So, you know, this is a classic look. This has got a lot of history behind it. I know people think Cleveland's like a loserville because of what we've had, you know, no Super Bowl appearances. But it's great tradition, a great fan base. And to me, one of the best uniforms in all of sports. I love the color combination. I love the old school stripes on the shoulders. And I like the stripes on the socks. I think all in all, they did a really good job.
You're right. We're suckers for this right here. We're right in that age range where if you go back to jerseys from the mid to late 90s, we're going to be all about it because it takes us back to a simpler time for us. So I think this elicits those reactions. But it's just a cleaner look, and I love the brown. Any team that showcases the brown proudly, I'm a fan of that, Chris.
Right. I mean, who like, seriously, is there another team – an American professional sports that even has that color combination? you know, it's special, right? And I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, but baseball and basketball, I mean, yeah. I can't think
the
of
Padres,
one, right?
The Padres in baseball have the brown, but they don't have the orange like that. And I like
right,
the Padres
right.
brown.
Yeah,
it's
me
good.
Too.
It's but sharp.
Yeah.
It's sharp.
It is sharp. They're I'm not, glad they got rid of those ugly ass orange pants. That was the biggest thing they did and the best
yes.
thing they did by far. All
we
right,
haven't
let's get
done
after
our
it.
Top
get,
five.
Get to my ass. Let's
okay.
go.
All right,
here we go.
I was just
going
to say, Chris, we haven't gotten to our top five jerseys yet. We're saving that for after the draft, maybe. So
right.
Who knows? Maybe the Browns will get up there. Probably not, but they're closer than they were before. All right, your reactions to your cornerback rankings. Let's start there. This one comes. Oh, actually, let's first take a look at your rankings here. Here they are. You shocked the world once again, Chris, with Jeffrey Okuda. Many think he could go top five, maybe as high as number three to Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions. You had him as the number three overall cornerback prospects, although you still are, you're still very complimentary of him, but you just liked Henderson and A.J. Terrell from Clemson just a little bit better. Got a comment here from MTL406, Chris. He says,
awesome.
I like Chris, but, oh no, whenever it
Uh-oh.
Starts like that, you're in trouble. I like Chris, but think his logic is flawed. He harped on athleticism, indicating that CJ and AJ possesses more than Okuda, but he's making 40 times synonymous with athleticism. Terrell had a 52 percentile jump score, 26 percentile agility score, and 47th percentile catch radius. And if you do look at the athletic profile from Okuda
sure.
and a lot of those things outside of the 40-yard dash, as we're showing you here to our YouTube audience, he does rank out pretty high in a lot of those categories that maybe AJ or CJ don't. So how would you respond to that criticism, Chris?
Well, listen, I've never argued that the guy wasn't an elite athlete. All I'm saying, first off, is just that he's not on the level of the other two, in my opinion, and just far as especially when it comes to covering man-to-man. I really like Okuda's game. I do. The 40 is more important for the cornerback position probably than any other position on the football field. And, hey, yes, vertical, you know, the ability to change direction, all those numbers he put up at the combine, they're impressive. The other guys didn't really do some of that stuff, right? I mean, if I remember correctly, Terrell and Henderson, you know, they did the broad jump and the vertical. And, yes, they weren't as good as Okuda. But at the same time, all I know is they were faster than Okuda for sure, okay? And the film shows that they are faster than Okuda. I think Okuda is a top 15 pick, no doubt about it. But I think his ability to turn and run and stay up with premier top flight, top speed wide receivers, I question that a little bit. I don't question it at all with A.J. Terrell and Henderson. Henderson and A.J. Terrell were put on an island almost every game, and they just said, go cover that guy. Okuda was really good. He did that sometimes, but Ohio State plays some zone defense. They do some different things. He got the privilege of that. And really, when you really get into Okuda, too, with, like, just true speed receivers, I would say this, Ahmed, one of the games that concerns me a whole lot is just the Penn State game. You know, K.J. Hamler could run. And the few times they put on Okuda on K.J. Hamler, it didn't look good for Okuda. Now, you know, A.J. Terrell and Henderson, they covered a lot of top-end, first-round NFL wide receivers and were always in the hip pocket of all those guys. So, again, it's not about disliking Okuda. I know the consensus has Okuda number one. The consensus is always right. Did you know that? They're always right.
Yeah.
Mitchell Trubisky
right.
is better than Patrick Mahomes. You didn't know that, right? The consensus said he was better back then. Oh, that's right. Sometimes the consensus is wrong. Damn.
So here's,
okay.
Here's my question to you, because I've heard you say that, and I've often agreed with you here, is that we see how their careers play out, and it very rarely goes according to how we had them mocked before the NFL draft. And so there's a lot of variance with a lot of these players. So, of course, you
sure.
should have differing opinions. It does seem like, from what we see on the media side, right, you do get a consensus more. I'm curious, you've been on the other side of it. You were in the draft room with the Patriots, or just as close to the draft room as Bill Belichick would let you. How different do you think each NFL team evaluates these prospects? Is it more different than what we see from the media and the scouts in the media as when they compile these mock drafts? Do the actual NFL teams have rankings that look closer to yours, where these players range from 1 to 10, and there really are a lot of different opinions?
Well, I think that, okay, I could tell you, you know, 1, and, you know, I had a lot of positive reactions from people in the NFL with my rankings. Not everybody agrees, but more times than not, I feel like I get positive reinforcement there. And the big thing is, listen, I'm not trying to say I'm always right or I always have the right answers. I know I've been around a bunch of big time corners in my life, all right? Whether it was college or the NFL, I know what one looks like. You know I'm obsessed with football and I study film and watch it all day long. And again, it's not a knock on Okuda. He's a really good football player. But I think the big thing that happens in this job a lot is the narrative gets kind of put out there by the people and the evaluators who don't necessarily always really matter when the time comes. I mean, we're getting into where top flight GMs and the head coaches and the coordinators, they've just figured out who they really like here in the last 10 to 20 days. And that's why you see all of a sudden, you know, different mock drafts and guys going up and down the board, because instead of doing their own evaluation, sometimes a lot of people in the media just go by what they hear from their friends in the NFL, which I don't like that aspect of it. But yes, I mean, we were told Okuda was really good. Ohio State was awesome all year long. And it was just the narrative that started the season and people ride with it. And of course, he never had a glaring moment that people could look at it and go, oh, see, you know, Clemson, A.J. Terrell, he let up a few yards against LSU, and Ja'Marr Chase, who's going to be the number one pick at receiver next year. And people go, oh, see, that's I can point to that. He's not the top corner in the draft. And I would say, you know, no. I mean, A.J. Terrell was all over Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, all over. And that was impressive to me. The fact that he was in his hip pocket, some perfect throws, a push off by Ja'Marr Chase, ended up being completions for LSU. But from what I saw with just the pure raw explosiveness, Ahmed, very, very impressed by Henderson and A.J. Terrell. And if I'm wrong, you know, I'll say I'm wrong. I just think Okuda might be more Chris Harris Jr., all right, or one of those guys. And I think Henderson is like Byron Jones and A.J. Terrell is like Marshawn Lattimore, okay? And those are guys that can match up with like really top-end outside-type receivers, and that's why I just like them a little bit more.
Your safety rankings did not elicit quite as much of controversy. Here you got Antoine Winfield Jr. when you came out with it with Paul the other day. You said he's one of your favorite players in the draft.
He is.
Earl Thomas at Texas. You did not include Isaiah Simmons in these rankings. He will be in your linebacker ranks here and a little bit later in this podcast. But we did get one question from Grant Dickman 2. He goes, whoa, no Grant Delpit in the top 5. I understand the lack of tackles, but he is a complete ball hawk, really played tremendously until halfway through the year when he battled through an injury. And this really is surprising, Chris, because basically from what we've done so far, if you played for LSU, you got to rank in the top 2 at your position in the Chris Sims draft ranking so far. But you didn't have Delpit in your top 5. Why?
Well, he's got NFL starting safety caliber traits. You know, there's no doubt about that. Now, yes, you know, I think it was a little underwhelming, the film. You know, our man there talked about the missed tackles. Yeah, there's a lot of missed tackles. I'm sorry. I don't know how you're supposed to feel comfortable about that. You're a safety. Your job is to save the play from being a big play. So that's scary to me with the lack of open field tackles. You know, the inability to change direction real explosively to break down and make those tackles, let alone I just didn't think the raw athletic ability was on par with the other guys that I saw there. Explosion, acceleration, whatever it may be. And I thought really in pass coverage, he was a little sluggish with his feet as well. So again, it's not necessarily a knock on the guy. He's a really good football player. I just don't think the other guys that I talked about, I mean, Xavier McKinney, Antoine Winfield, they have elite quickness, elite acceleration, elite aggressiveness. You know, they throw their bodies around. I like Delpit, but yeah, those are the things that bother me. I, you know, here in my notes, you know, I just wrote, the big question is just, you know, I would have guessed mid 4.6s when it comes to the 40. He's not real twitchy. The acceleration is above average, but nothing special. The quicks are just okay. And I just wrote, there's nothing elite about the player. He's a good player, but he's not a first-round talent, not real physical, misses a lot of tackles, not great range as a free safety. And like I said, I just wrote speed and acceleration just okay. So, you know, that's where it is. And again, it's not about, you know, me not liking the player. I just don't think he ranks up there with the guys that I have ahead of him.
Played through a high ankle sprain through parts of 2019. You don't know how much of that did.
That's right. You don't know.
But
that's right.
Still in there. Brett Walker, one more on the safeties here. Brett Walker asks you, are you putting Jeremy Chinn in your linebacker rankings? Jeremy Chinn, the senior out of Southern Illinois, safety, linebacker, maybe a hybrid player. What would you consider him and how did you like him?
Yeah, well, a really intriguing guy. I mean, like a guy where you turn on the film and you go like, whoa, who is this freak of nature out here on the field? I mean, what this guy looks like, you know, RoboCop out there. That's what he looks like, especially playing in that level of football. I think he has potential to be something special. Now, for me to put him in the linebacker conversation, no way. The biggest issue I had with him was physicality and the ability to tackle. So therefore, he's not that. I think this guy's still raw. He's still learning to play football. And I think that's the big thing. You know, when I got into it, I just wrote, hips are average. You know, when he's in this back pedal and he's got to turn and run, it's a little lumbering at times, okay? You know, speed does not always pop. He kind of has, you know, I think he's a little bit of a thinker. When he sees it and knows what he wants, man, he can go. But there's a lot of hesitation in this game as far as read and react to the football. So that bothered me. And then the biggest thing, what I said, was his ability or inability to break down is underwhelming for the specimen he is. And I, when I see breakdown, I mean, you know, like you saw Cam Chancellor all those years come up, break down, he's in a wide split, and he's ready to dive to the right or dive to the left or take off to the right or take off to the left to make a tackle. Man, Jeremy Chinn against, you know, players that are not as talented as he is, they got away from him too much for me. So would I be shocked if this kid was a superstar 3 years from now? No, I would not. All I'm just saying is there's some work there. He's got to be more polished up. He needs some NFL coaching, but he's got chance to be something special. He's just not where those other guys are yet, quite yet.
And now for your special defensive tackles in this 2020 draft class. Do you have your notes ready? You have multiple.
I'm ready. Let me turn a few pages. Chris, you know I need my notes in the right spot, okay? So let me get to it. I got two different notebooks now, so
that's a nightmare, Chris. That's a disaster. You've got to keep all your prospects in one notebook.
It is a disaster. I can't lie. It actually drives me crazy sometimes. Okay, and then I got some stuff on a computer, so I got it all going. But I think I'm good here and ready to go. So whenever you want me to start this, let's do it.
I would say I just stalled for you, but basically I just watched you talk and try to get your notes together at the same time.
I stalled for me.
I didn't help you. Yeah, you stalled for yourself. All right, so defensive tackles, the Chris Sims top five for 2020. This is an exciting group because I think there are a couple players who could be gone off the board in the first 10 picks, maybe even higher than that. But they are near the top of your rankings, I would assume. But hey, if this has shown us anything, is that you do not necessarily go by the consensus. You're going to look at the tape, you're going to evaluate it for yourself, and not be pressured by anyone else to put anyone high just because a lot of other people are. So we'll start with number five for you, your number five defensive tackle prospect.
Well, Jordan Elliott from Missouri. I think that's where I'm going to start. I mean, first off, I'm at the defensive tackle position. Like you said, it's a talented group. There's more guys in this group that merit first-round picks than I expected when I started to break this down. And the more I get into this draft, I actually am starting to realize I probably have like 45 guys that I have first-round grades on. So I think there's a little bit of better high-end quality in this draft than I realized going into it. But, you know, this kid, it reminds me a little bit of Sheldon Richardson, who came out of Missouri, okay? Maybe not quite as athletic as Sheldon Richardson was, but maybe more power than he has altogether. And I was just shocked as the film kept going on. I mean, this is a disruptive interior 4-3 defense, 3 technique type of defensive tackle, like a Sheldon Richardson is, okay? But he's unbelievable at getting off blocks. He has incredible upper body strength, Ahmed. I mean, when people are on him and he's in a fight with a double team or whatever, I mean, he's just raw, raw, get off me. And he's got great eyes into the backfield to know where the running back is to properly disengage with the guy blocking him, right, to throw him the right way so therefore then he could go tackle him. So I love that about him. He's got great hands and great upper body strength to disengage from blockers, whether it's the run game or pass game. For a guy that's 302 pounds, it's a pretty good anchor versus double teams. And I mean that by, you know, anchor. He can hold his ground. He doesn't get blown back 5 yards down the field. He played against a lot of good, big-time SEC, NFL defensive linemen. But, you know, for a guy that doesn't necessarily have, like, the length where you would go, oh, he can play in a 3-4 defense, he's very good at two-gapping. And for all those out there, they go, what do you mean by two-gapping? He can really hold players up and play this gap or that gap according to which way the ball carrier goes. And some defenses are going to really value that. But, man, his grip and rip move as far as pass rush goes, he's incredibly disruptive, and he is a true mismatch for guards and pass protection. So I look at this guy as just being an all-around really good football player who's a good athlete and has the ability to, you know, be a little bit of a defensive tackle sack machine to a degree and be disruptive that way. I was really impressed by what I saw.
PFF, Pro Football Focus, very high on him, had him the highest graded defensive tackle in college from this past season.
Okay, that's good
and
to know.
He did it in the SEC, which is impressive as well, Missouri. And as you mentioned, you know, offensive linemen that he faced would often give him special attention, you know, a double team. And so he did have to produce and do his job when he was the main focal point. You got to stop him if you're taking on Missouri. Some of the negatives that I found out there that a couple of scouts put on him, it took him a while to show up in college, which maybe necessarily isn't a bad thing. Maybe he's just now figuring it out. And also that he has moments when his motor cools in pursuit and maybe doesn't finish on the big plays. But there weren't a whole lot of negatives out there on Jordan Elliott.
Yeah, and you know, again, you know, I've heard that where people say, you know, it was kind of just this last year where he started to flash and dominate and do things like that. Again, we got to remember, guys are kids. They're not men yet. And I don't mean to say that in a disrespect way. I'm just telling you, when I was 21 years old, I grew another quarter of an inch. I was putting on pounds, and I went from 222 to 230 pounds. So, you know, these are still growing boys, growing young men in a lot of ways, where they're still thickening out, becoming stronger, and doing those things. But, man, Ahmed, I've just – the player itself, if you give him a gap to win and just say, hey, you need to win the gap between the guard and the tackle, ooh, he's going to be a handful because he can – he's got great get-off. He can explode through the gap itself and just cause havoc or, you know, my favorite stat, which is fuck the play up, let alone – he's got a little bend around the edge passing, you know, pass rushing from the inside on guards and tackles. And like I said, for 303 pounds, I was really impressed with his strength at the point of attack with double teams and getting blockers off him. Really good football player. I think he goes – I think I wrote down, I think he's somewhere between 20 and 40 in the NFL draft. Wow. So yeah. I think he's that type of prospect in my mind. Yep.
You think all five of your defensive tackles have a chance to go possibly in the first round, late first round here. So number five is Jordan Elliott out of Missouri. Number four defensive tackle prospect for Chris Sims.
Number four is Raekwon Davis from Alabama. Yeah. And this is a different type of guy here. This is Richard Seymour. This is, let's say, Muhammad Wilkerson type of guy, Ahmed. It's not going to always be sexy, pretty, oh my gosh, he's so explosive and athletic. No, he's a little bit more of a, you know, first off, Alabama, the film can trick you if you don't know what to watch for. And Alabama, a lot of the times, they ask their D linemen, like, hey, not to fly upfield and cause disruption. They're like the New England Patriots. They kind of just say, hey, hold your guy, hold your ground, and you know, whether it's a run or a pass, we want you to disengage, you know, appropriately. Oh, here comes the ball. Get rid of your guy and tackle the ball carrier. Oh, now you see it's a pass. Let go of your guy or rip him out of the way and try to pass rush him that way. So they don't always get the green light to attack. But, man, this is a giant human being who is very athletic for his size and really can play just about any position on the defensive line, Ahmed, anyone, in any scheme. It doesn't really matter. And I think that's really the big value to him, you know, and he just never physically loses a battle, ever. Holds his ground, two gaps, causes more disruption than you would expect for a guy this size, can just simply overpower guys and push them back into the backfield. But, you know, I'm big on what does your bad look like? And your bad for a guy like Raekwon Davis is like, oh, you get a stalemate at the line of scrimmage and you don't move him at all. That's as bad as it gets. You know, and there's going to be great value in that in the NFL. And I think he's a hell of a player. And yes, again, I think another guy that's in that late first round, you know, early second round conversation. And not all defenses are going to like him, Ahmed. I don't know if a lot of 4-3 base defenses like the Seattle Seahawks, I don't think they'll like him. But New England, Baltimore, some of the teams that have more of the 3-4 in them, I think they're going to look at him and go, oh, this is our kind of guy. He's a stud.
Things that are noted here, tools for days. You mentioned the elite physical traits, so big, 6'6", 3'11". Long and strong was one of the direct quotes that I saw from one of the scouts out there, very versatile in what he can do. I guess the question with him, and you touched on it a little bit with the production with him and the numbers, and,
right.
And you're not a guy that looks at numbers and stats.
Not
and
at all.
You look at his physical ability, but there's a little bit of a worry out there that 2017 was the best version of Raekwon Smith. Just two sacks his final 2 years. He didn't necessarily get better throughout his college career is one of the knocks on him. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think, you know, again, you know, stats don't always tell the story. You know, it just doesn't. You know, we look at sacks sometimes, and I can see a guy that's got 10 sacks, and I go, well, like 8 of them were coverage sacks, or like the quarterback fell down. So are we going to give the guy like a first-round grade just because he got 10 sacks? You know, no. You know, there's more to it. But I think the big thing is, and this happens a lot with the Alabama guys, like I said, because it's not about stats or tackles or disruption with them. They're asked to do different things. And, you know, I'll bring up the example of a guy for the Washington Redskins, Daron Payne. A lot of people thought he was like a second or third round choice out of Alabama a few years ago at defensive tackle. And it was the same type of question. Well, there's not a lot of tackles. There's not a lot of sacks. There's no production. But that just wasn't his job. His job was to hold the fort down and just, you know, create a mosh pit in the middle of an offense and defensive line. That's what his job was. You know, if he was given the green light to go, he could have been a lot more disruptive. But so that's where I really get into it. And, you know, again, I've heard people say, oh, he's DeForest Buckner. I think he's more powerful than DeForest Buckner. I don't think he's as athletic as a DeForest Buckner. That's why I kind of said like the Richard Seymour, Muhammad Wilkerson type guy. And that's why he won't be for everybody's defense, because he's not that like shoot the gap like we just talked about with the Missouri kid and he's going to fly in there and just ruin a play. No, that's not what he's going to do. He's going to be more of a, hey, this time we got him a nose tackle. This time we got him a 3 technique. Oh, hey, now we're in the 3-4. Now we need him head up on the tackle and he's got a 2 gap. He's going to be able to do all those different things and be able to do them all at a very, very high level. And I think that's the thing I like about the man the most.
Was reading around, someone said he has the upside to be the best tackle in the draft. So there is still room to grow, still potential for Raekwon Davis out of Alabama, who Chris Sims has as the number 4 defensive tackle prospect heading into the draft. Number 3, we're into the top 3 already. Number 3, Chris, who you got?
Well, I'm going to do, which is OU, okay? And I'm going to Nevin Gallimore, all right?
Neville,
sorry. I didn't mean to say that. I don't want to mess that up. But
Canadian Bulldozer is his nickname, if you'd just rather go with that.
I love it, because that's what he is. All right, I don't even know where to start with this guy. First off, when you're 6'2", 304 pounds, and you run a 4.79, like, that'll make you go, huh, I wonder what this film is going to look like. you know, because you just go, is this a combine freak who's not that good on the football field? Or what is this going to look like? Or is he as freaky as the numbers look? And I came to the latter, that he's as freaky as the numbers look. I would have a hard time trying to come up with anybody other than Aaron Donald, who I would say is a better interior pass rusher that I've seen on film at the defensive tackle position the last 2 years. I mean, that's where this guy is. I mean, he's incredible. I mean, his quickness, his ability, like we talked about with the Missouri kid, to shoot through a gap and just ruin a play. I mean, it's as good as I've seen. It really is. And he has got legit athleticism as a pass rusher, but he is strong as hell. And, you know, I know there's some knocks out there. People talk about, oh, and run defense, he's not always perfect. Well, let me give people a little food for thought for at least what I saw there. You know, Oklahoma's a team, Ahmed, that likes to stunt and slant their defensive linemen all over the place, right? So imagine you're Neville Gallimore, and you're over between this guard and center gap. And now the coach wants you at the snap to slant and go all the way to the other center and guard snap. Well, what if you're going to do that, and now there's down block by the guard you're lined up over? So now you're running one way with a guy pushing you on your back, and do evaluators expect him to just stop cold in the hole and be like, oh, 320-pound man on my back, you shall stop here because I stop. No, there's no human on earth that can do that. And I see too many comments with that where, he gets moved in the running game. Listen, when they ask him to play one gap, the one that's in front of him, which he'll be asked to do more times than not in the NFL, he wins it almost every single time, let alone, like I said, the pass rush traits are really, really special for somebody that size playing defensive tackle.
There are so many positives when you're reading around on him. Runs like a tight end. You mentioned that 4.7940 time. He's lost weight, too. He shed about 25 pounds before this season. He benches 500 pounds, squats 800, so he's just a beast. He's fast. He's strong.
A beast.
Can blow up the place. And it is also noted here, he's going to be a plus in the locker room a guy, and he helped himself immensely at the Senior Bowl. So not only did he impress with his physical abilities, it seems like he is a plus in the character department as well. At least that's what the team evaluators are saying about him.
It's what I've heard. It's what it shows on film too, Ahmed. I mean, he hustles like no other. He's got an incredible motor that way. He's tough. He throws his body around. I mean, this was one of the pleasant surprises of the whole draft for me here. It really was. When I turned on the film, I just went, oh, my gosh. You know, like I said, his ability to rush the passer from the inside, I say is every bit as good as Ed Oliver or Aaron Donald. Now, is he quite as strong as they are at the point of attack? No. I'll say he's a little less than they are. But, man, his athleticism, his twitch, his ability just to explode straight ahead and get on the edge of a pass-protecting guard, and then now the guard can't catch up and he edges him and gets around him. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, this kid can be a star in the NFL and a major, major contributor to F the play up Chris Sims style in the NFL for sure.
So unless you're going completely off the board, it looks like defensive tackle, you're going to go with the consensus for the most part here, because I believe the top two defensive tackles out there are flip-flopping. There's not really a real consensus on who should be the number one guy off the board. So let's hear who's number two for you this year in 2020.
Well, it is a little bit, and I want to say this. I mean, this is almost as close as it gets to as far as a tie at the top, okay? I didn't know what to do. And with these two guys, too, as I flip through my notes and filibuster here, I want to let you know, too, I had a hard time figuring out who I wanted to make number one and number two. And the last thing I'll say about it, okay, is,
and you may be still deciding. And with the way your filibuster is going right here, I feel like you still don't know who you want to
no,
put there.
I finally got to the pages where I got there. Okay. But I want to say this. All right. My number two is Javon Kinlaw, and my number one will be Derek Brown. All right. But man, is it close. And first off, just let me make this blanket statement with both of these guys. These are top five picks in the NFL draft. That's how good they are. I think they are worthy of a top five pick, either one of them. It does not matter. They are definitely top 10 picks. I know that. But when I watch their film, I look at it and go, oh, it's every bit as good as Quinnen Williams last year. Yet these guys are bigger and stronger and can hold the ground better. You know, so if you want me to start with Javon Kinlaw, I mean, it starts with built like a brick shit house. I don't know. I've never seen many humans in the history of the world built like this guy. Like, it's insane, Ahmed. He is put together with, like, looks like he's got cuts, and you can see definition in his arms. He's got an incredible legs and ass, as you know. I'm very big into that. And he's 325 pounds. And I look at him and go, if he wanted to put on weight to be 340, he could do it, no problem. I mean, it's really whatever the guy wants to do. But, I mean, first off, there's no weakness to the guy's football game. It's incredible strength. It's incredible get off the ball. It's incredible throwing would-be blockers off of him as he's trying to pursue the football or whatever it may be. I mean, there's really not anything I look at in my notes here to say negatively about him. I wrote, he's incredible at shedding blocks. His power is off the charts. Power and strength is unbelievable. Great get off. I mean, I wrote, man, I mean, he can like really run. Like, I was shocked. All right. If there's a negative, maybe he's a hair more stiff than our man Brown at Auburn, but quickness versus the pass versus guards. I mean, he could win with just straight ahead sheer strength, or he gets them off balance with, like, you know, a shimmy or a shake move, which, like, at 326 pounds, I don't know if I've ever seen a human do that. So I just looked at that and just went, man, this is a no-brainer. I mean, I didn't need to watch much film here. I watched a lot because it was fun to watch. But he is a dominant, dominant football player who's going to have a long, long career. And I had a hard time coming up with a comparison to this kid. You know, I want to say Ndamukong Suh is like the closest thing I could say to being like built like that, can move like that, is as aggressive like that. I mean, it's truly pretty remarkable to watch what he does on a play-by-play basis.
One of the negatives with him maybe could be, you know, he had labrum surgery on his hip in 2018, but he played huge chunks even with that hip injury and played pretty well. So who knows, maybe even that injury history is a strength, as it shows what he was able to do despite being 100%. One of the things they note about him, and it's kind of interesting, the same thing you talk about receivers and their route running ability and if they displayed right. It in college and if they were asked to do it in college. He doesn't have a whole lot of moves, just has a push-pull and a swim move so far.
That's right.
But yet he was still very successful with just those two moves. You assume he's going to be able to learn more as he gets into the NFL, and so he is still a raw work in progress who is still able to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of times when I hear that type of stuff about this player, you know, and they're right. He doesn't win a lot of different ways. So just think about when you teach him some different ways to win, what he can do. You know, there is something to that. You know, sometimes you find a player that's really, really polished in there, but doesn't have the physical ability, and the polish fools us all. They go, oh, we think he's good. But then you get to the NFL and a guard and a tackle know how to stop some of the advanced hand fighting the guy might have. And now it just goes, oh, let's see how big and strong and physically gifted you are. And all of a sudden they lose because they've lost that advantage of being well-schooled in some of the technical aspects you're talking about. So Kinlaw, I mean, yes, there's really nothing to talk about. I mean, it's as good as it gets. I was in shock and awe. And you're right. I mean, there is not a lot of different ways he wins. But when he does learn some different pass rush moves and some different hand fighting techniques and things like that, watch the hell out. I mean, the thing I wrote at the end is he can do it all. He's got no weakness to his game. I wrote, I think Brown is slightly better, but I'm going to have to take a second look to confirm because that's how close I thought it was. And this guy's he's a no miss, you know, no brainer at some point in the top 10 for a football team.
Number two, Javon Kinlaw, may have been just 1B to your number one defensive tackle prospect in the class of 2020, Derrick Brown out of Auburn, another giant human being, 6'4", 326. And you say he, too, could be, should be a top five pick in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it just, it's amazing. And again, another guy where I looked at and I went, who do I compare him to? I don't even, like, I've never seen a human this big move this quickly and be this pliable. Like, he reminds me in a lot of ways of Warren Sapp, except he's just a bigger human. He's like the 25 years later, bigger version of Warren Sapp. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like evolution. Here's the best defensive tackle in football in the mid-90s, and now this is what the best defensive tackles look like in 2020. And that's what he is. He's got a similar build to that. You know, I mean, just it just incredible athleticism for somebody his size. Long arms, and when he locks you out, it's over. And when I mean when he gets like this and people are trying to push him, it doesn't matter if it's one or two guys, it's over. He's going to stand his ground, and you're not going to move him. That's the first thing I loved about him. You know, rare size, athleticism, flexibility, pliability combo. I've never seen anybody this big be able to bend and move and, you know, be in awkward positions and throw off an offensive guard or offensive tackle. He can win any way you want. That's the thing I wrote, you know, towards the bottom. I just wrote, he can win with pure speed and just shoot the gap. He can overpower you and overwhelm you with his hands right up underneath your chin and just push you back. And then he can do some of the shimmy shake, too, that we just talked about with Kinlaw to make guards and tackles off balance. He gets you leaning one way, and then bam, bam, he hits you with your hands, and all of a sudden he's hitting your quarterback. So, you know, again, he can play just about any position on the D-line, Ahmed. He could two-gap in a 3-4 defense. He can play shade nose. He could play 3-technique, you know, and – I only had one negative, okay? One thing. His body scares me a little bit, okay? You know, that's where, yeah, it just, it's a little too
I mean, it scares me
middle.
Too if he was in the room standing right next to me right now. Is that what you mean? He could squash me with a sneeze.
He could definitely squash us both. He would whoop the crap out of both of us in under a minute. No doubt about that. But you know me, I'm into bodies, and bodies do tell player, you know, there's some commonalities there between a body and how long you'll last or what kind of body might worry you or whatever it may be. Okay. And I have no worries about Javon Kinlaw's body. Like I told you, he's a Greek god. This guy, you know, has good legs, but not like the best legs. You know, I'm into that. And there's a lot of weight in the midsection. Okay, and if I was just going to say one thing that scares me with a body like that, one bad offseason, one bad like, ooh, I didn't care about what I ate and I didn't train very hard, and I worry a guy like that could get very sloppy in a hurry. That's my only concern. It has nothing to do with the play on the field. And again, I don't know the human being himself. That's where teams are going to have to do their due diligence to know, is this the kind of guy that will stay in shape and stay on top of himself, or will he let himself go at times and then try to battle back at some point? You know, that'll be something for teams to digest. But again, another can't-miss prospect, Ahmed. I mean, just an absolute freak and monster of a person.
And I think teams, even if he does gain that weight and he loses some mobility and, you know, a little bit of speed, teams are certain that he's going to be elite at stopping the run, taking on those double teams, and
no
matter what his body looks like. And so maybe that is why some people do have Kinlaw a little bit higher. Because the ceiling, when we've talked about this before, floor and ceiling, it seems like the floor for Brown is very safe. You know he's going to be an elite run stopper probably his entire NFL career.
Yes,
Kinlaw
right.
will be good at stopping the run, but he also has a little more potential. Maybe he's more disruptive in the pass game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. You know, Brown maybe has better hands. He's got a little bit better bend. I think it's very close in all areas. I really do. And, you know, I'm interested just from, again, you know me, I don't really read a lot of different stuff on people. I see some mock drafts and things like that. But when you did your research, you know, what did you see? Did you see more people you thought that had Brown in front of Kinlaw or Kinlaw in front of Brown?
It was about even. It really was even, because I saw a couple, and it seemed like the consensus early on was Brown. And then a couple of people bucked the trend with Kinlaw, and then that got in vogue. And so I think he's gaining some steam within the expert mock drafters right now. But the consensus with Brown is that, just like you mentioned, dominant run stuffer, was elite. And he, you know, he returned his senior season, which turned out to be a really smart move for Derek because he was going to be a first rounder either way, but now he's a potential top five pick, and teams like him too. They're enthusiastic about him off the field, and so there's just a ton to like. And I think a lot of people came to the same conclusion that you did. Both of these dudes are really good.
Yeah, they are both really good. I don't think you can miss either way. I really don't. And like I said, I think they fit any scheme you want to play on the defensive side of the ball, let alone, you know, hey, if you had a good three technique and you said, we already have a good three technique, you just go, well, this guy can play shade nose. If you had a great shade nose and you went, oh, we already have a good shade nose, you go, well, this guy can play three technique. I mean, he really is going to work anywhere you want. But monsters, man, just couldn't say enough about them. And yes, I think they are. I think their top five talents would be like jaw drop shocked if they got outside the top 10. I really mean that.
Producer Pete Demolitis goes, boo, consensus, Chris sold out. The Twitter haters got to him. You were scared of the reaction by dropping Brown and Kinlaw to your top five.
Yeah, well, you know, all I do is let the film talk to me. And not that it always talks to me the right way, but I just watch the film and watch the player, and I let that tell me. And then I get done, I look at my notes, and I start to read them, and that usually tells me the story. So, oh my gosh, I guess I'm not trying to get clickbait. I guess not. Damn, yeah. I don't know what to say.
You don't even have a website. There's nothing for people to click on, I think is what they're mistaking the point there. You have nothing to click on. If you're going to go do it for the clicks, you need something to click on.
Hey, one more guy I think we need to just give a little love to here, because I think that he is also in the first round conversation, is the Ross Blacklock from TCU. You know, he to me has a little bit of, you know, what we talked about with Jordan Elliott from Missouri and a little bit of what we talked about with Neville Gallimore from Oklahoma. He's kind of like a combination of both. He's got a little more athleticism than a guy like Jordan Elliott from Missouri, but not as athletic as Gallimore. Okay, so that's kind of how I look at him that way. I mean, he can be very disruptive. I think he's going to have a really good career too. But he's a guy that I liked. He just came out of the top five for me there.
Maybe a little bit of a tweener, edge players, inside the
that's
tackle,
the big
not the
thing.
Biggest there. Yeah.
No doubt about it. He's a little bit of a tweener. I didn't love the way he looked and taking on double teams. And I think he will have a little problem of like standing up to certain teams as far as being a true defensive tackle. And I think that's ultimately, what made me not put him in the top part there.
So that is your top five rankings. Ross, you did not make the top five, but you did get the only shout out as an honorable mention. As Chris flips the page now, this is a meaty pod because now we go into the linebacker prospects, and there are some really good ones. One that seems to stand out more than the rest of them. We'll see if he stands out to Chris at number one. But I guess just generally overall, your thoughts on this linebacker class, which it's kind of weird because going through a lot of these prospects, it seems like there were a lot that were like, okay, is he an edge? Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Is he a defensive back? There seems to be a lot of variance here in what they could be.
Yeah, there is. There's a little bit of everything as far as it. And you got to, you know, it's going to come down to how teams, what they need, you know, what type of scheme they play on the defensive side of the ball. But yeah, you got your true middle linebackers. You got your hybrid linebackers who could be like outside linebackers and probably a stand-up inside linebacker. You know, to what your point is, I mean, there's some guys on here that are listed as linebackers where I go, yeah, this guy's more of a strong safety than a linebacker, really. So there's a little bit of everything. And this day and age in the NFL, you need a little bit of everything. You know, depending on the personnel you're trying to match up against the opposing offense, you know, the style the team plays on a week-to-week basis of whoever you're playing, you know, you need some variety as far as these linebacker positions. There's a reason New England has like 14 linebackers on their roster every year. Because they want to go, oh, we have the big physical traditional type. If we got to play a team like the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to try to run it. And then if you're going to try to pass it, we got a bunch of hybrid linebackers who can play defensive end, outside linebacker, middle linebacker, and you don't know where we're coming from. And some can cover, and some are great in space, and some are thumpers. So you know, it's an important position with all the different tight ends and running backs and, you know, hybrid receivers with size. You know, Michael Thomas is a slot receiver. You got to have some big athletic, you know, linebackers to cover those guys and the Travis Kelce's of the world. So very good group. A lot of potential here. A lot more talent at the position than I was expecting.
All right, so let's get it going. Number five, the number five linebacker ranking for Chris in the 2020 class.
Well, I'm going to go to – let me make sure I get to my page here, okay? Just so I'm there.
Oh, no, sorry. Okay, wait, hold on. The number five prospect for Chris Sims in the 2020 NFL draft, and that player is – oh, no,
it
I didn't
is,
spell
– there it is. It's the other notebook. Josh Uche. Uche?
Oh.
Uche, right?
Yeah, Uche.
Okay, from Michigan. Now, here's one of these guys, like you talked about, that's a little bit of a hybrid, right? He is a unbelievable athlete at the linebacker position. He didn't run at the combine. He's 6'1", 245. Okay, he played stand-up linebacker, but also played defense end. And yeah. Was very good at both.
He didn't play much at all his first few years at Michigan. I mean, he's the production is light because he just wasn't necessarily starting and on the field a ton.
Well, I'm sure at first, you know, and he's a little bit of a raw guy, right? And that's why I got him at number five. It's the physical tools that are special. Is he perfect as a player? No, he's not. And, you know, to what you're saying, Ahmed, I'm sure he's a tweener. You know, I'm sure they were a little bit like, where the hell do we put this guy? Is he a safety, a defense end, a linebacker? What the hell do we do with him? But they finally found the right position for him. And man, Ahmed, I mean, first off, you know, he is an incredible athlete, and he's got out of this world strength for his size. I think that's the first thing that jumped out to me. I couldn't get over it. You know, for to be 245 pounds, he can legitimately, like, set the edge and hold his ground against offensive tackles, like, very easily, to where I was really impressed by that aspect of his football game. So that's the first thing that jumped out to me. Now, you know, physicality, taking on blocks, he is willing. You know, pursuit of the ball, sideline to sideline, he can fly. So, you know, does he need some polish work on, you know, maybe taking on blocks? At times he's a little reckless when he's making open field tackles. Yeah, okay, I get that. But man, he is a really, really intriguing prospect where it's like he's got legitimate value as like a 4-3 will linebacker, a guy that you just say, hey, go get the football, right? That's all your job is. But he's also got legitimate value like coming off the edge as a pass rusher too if you wanted to change personnel that way. I mean, it's legit. So this is a different type of football player, but nonetheless, like very impressive. And I think a guy that is only going to improve as we continue to go on here.
Where would you draft him, though, if you were a team? Because you may still like the player and you may like the wild card nature of him because he just didn't get to show it that much in college. But some of the scouts noted here, and one of them said a liability in pass coverage could get pounded by offensive line in the run game. You just don't know. And so a lot of times in the draft, you do want that certainty, especially if you're taking a first, second, third round pick on the guy. Like, where are you comfortable drafting a guy like Uche?
I think that I'm comfortable somewhere in the first 20 picks of the second round, probably would be about where I would look at it.
Yeah.
You know, and again, some of the things we're talking about, you know, when you talk about coverage, you know, yeah, it could use some help, but the athletic ability is there. Like, that's one of those things where, you know, when he gets coached and somebody puts him at one position, he's going to learn. He has the ability to do those type of things. You know, when you talk about, like, the other comment you made about maybe getting run over in the run game, is that what you said? Or
yeah.
Getting blocked, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
His play strength is off the charts. I mean, for a guy that's 245 pounds, I've never seen a guy be able to hold up 320-pound offensive linemen as easily as he does. I mean, it really wow. is. Now, it's a little reckless and out of control, and he's still, like you said, because he's new to playing and stuff, he lacks a little read and recognition at times. He can be fooled by what he sees behind the line of scrimmage. If he sees a guy goes this way, he's a little too quick to, like, take the cheese and follow it. But I just think the pure, raw explosiveness, strength, and athletic ability of the guy was enough for me to put him in my top five. And somebody's going to find a position for him as a stand-up linebacker on their defense, and he's going to make a difference.
And some noted his potential as growing into perhaps an elite pass rusher with the great burst of speed that he has and the physical traits. Josh Uche, your first Michigan Wolverine in any of your rankings so far. You've been down on the Wolverines,
right.
But there you go. That's your first Wolverine is number five, Josh Uche. Number four, your number four linebacker for 2020 as you flip to the right page in the notebook.
I got it. But number four is Zach Bond from Wisconsin. And here's another guy that is a little bit of a, what's he going to be in the NFL? I think he can do two things. If you got a three, he's Kyle Van Noy. I saw Lance Zierlein on NFL.com compare him to Kyle Van Noy. And when I saw that, and then I watched the film, I said, damn, Lance is right. He is. That's what he is. He's Kyle Van Noy. That's what type of football player he is. Maybe even a hair more explosive than Kyle Van Noy was coming out of college. But, played defense end / stand-up outside linebacker, but has the ability to play off the ball and go around and be a traditional linebacker and make a lot of tackles that way too. Like we just talked about with Uche too, if you wanted to play him at defense end on a nickel pass rush situation, his ability to rush the passer is real. I mean, it really is. I was really impressed with his get off, his ability to kind of bend around the corner. But this is a really good football player that can do it all. Like, it kind of hurt me to put him at four, really. I'm just going to let you know. It hurt me. It's just the three guys in front of him are just a little bit, more impressive of specimens. But, some of the stuff I wrote, I wrote he's a Swiss Army knife. He's going to be able to play any position you want as far as a linebacker is concerned. And he can play rush end, which is like weak side defense end. His read and react skills, they're off the charts. They're great. He's physically explosive. I mean, he's all over the football field. And he really has a great ability, like I said, with the read and reaction stuff, to just diagnose plays and get to the right spot before the ball even gets there. Whether that's through film study or just his natural instincts of playing a lot of football, man, he's really good. Plus, he's the type of guy that's athletic enough that, you're going to be able to trust him to cover tight ends down the field and do those type of things. So, again, another guy where I looked at it and I just said, man, he's twitchy. He's explosive. He's strong at the point of attack. He's got great versatility. There's really nothing he can't do. And, one of the last things I wrote is he's got Patriots written all over him. He really does. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see, Bill take him in the first round, or maybe they trade down a few spots and get him a little later in the first round or the early second, somewhere in there. But I think ultimately this is a guy that's picked somewhere between 20 and 35 in the first, in the NFL draft coming up next week.
Scouts love that he is still early in his pass rush development, but could be a weapon as a blitzer. You mentioned the sideline to sideline range for him. One of the questions with him is that he was, he came to Wisconsin, interestingly enough, as a dual threat quarterback. So he's very athletic, played a lot of edge at Wisconsin, almost primarily.
Yeah.
And so now you go to the next level and you're like, oh, he's a linebacker. He should be able to do it. But he actually hasn't done a whole lot of it. You may think he can do it, but until you actually see him do it and then actually producing at the next level, a little bit of uncertainty there, which could factor into some teams' decisions.
That's ultimately, and I'm glad you led me down this road, is what led me to make him number four, was just that, I couldn't sit there and just go, oh, he's amazing right at this. He's really good at everything. But yes, it is a little bit of a projection of what he'll be in the NFL. And I do think that 3-4 teams will probably like him better than the 4-3 teams will like him. But I also would say I saw enough, Ahmed, of off-the-ball type linebacker stuff. Whether he was the weak side linebacker and he was playing in between the slot receiver and the offensive tackle, his ability to come up, take on pulling guards or fill a hole or make the tackle on a toss sweep or an ISO or anything like that, like a true stand-up middle linebacker would do. He can do it. I saw enough to go, he'll be okay. He might not be perfect at first, but I think between, the athleticism, the toughness, the strength, once he gets taught a little bit and just gets honed in on one spot, I think he'll be very good at it. But I do. I think teams like the Baltimore Ravens and the Patriots might look at him and go, damn, we could play him at three or four different spots if we get this guy.
Sure, sure. Tested positive at the combine for a diluted urine sample. He said he drank too much water. You think that concerns teams at all? Does that move him down in some teams' eyes?
No, I don't. Not with the new, substance abuse policy in the NFL. And, you know, again, the other thing I'll say to that is it's a little unfair. You know, it is. You know, the dilute sample. I mean, guys are walking around with gallons of water all day long. They're trying to, one, stay hydrated so they can get through a pretty grueling, important workout that they're, you know, nervous about. Two, everybody tries to drink a lot of water to cheat their weight, right? Because, you know, if drinking a lot of water will take me from 228 to 235 and teams will view me differently, then damn, a drink up. And that's what a lot of guys do. So that's where, you know, certainly I would throw caution to the wind on that one. I don't care about the dilute sample.
So you got two Big Ten players in your top five so far. Josh Uche from Michigan, Zach Bond from Wisconsin, number four. Let's get into your top three. Number three linebacker in the 2020 class, Chris.
I'm going to go with Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma. All right. Kenneth Murray. Man, this is a good football player. I mean, this to me is a guy that I look at and go, he's a top 25 pick in the draft. And just so you know, like my pro comparison that I wrote for him was C.J. Mosley, who now plays for the New York Jets. But this is a true middle linebacker. Whether you want him to be a 4-3 middle linebacker or, you know, a 3-4 middle linebacker that stands up there, I think the first thing – you know, he's got a prototype body. I mean, he's phenomenal. He's an Adonis looking in his uniform. Cut up, great legs, square shoulders. For the Big 12, whenever I turn on a linebacker in the Big 12, I always go, is he going to be able to play the run? What's he going to do with the first time he sees a pulling guard come at him? Is he going to be able to take that guy on and then shed him and make a block, you know, a tackle on the running back? You know, because the Big 12 is – yeah, nobody runs the ball. It's a 7-on-7 league. That's the way they play football. So I'm always a little concerned at first when I see a linebacker on a lot of people's boards as far as being a top draft pick. But, man, I don't have any of those concerns with this guy, man. I mean, he's very comfortable between the tackles and playing in the trash. He really is. Can take on blocks. Got a great nose for the football. I mean – you know, I'm always, of course, at the linebacker position, read and react skills are very important, right? You know, his ability to kind of diagnose the play and go, oh, I think the ball's going here and just fly to that spot and get there at the same time the ball carrier is getting to the hole. You know, they're outstanding. They're off the charts. I mean, he's very instinctive that way, you know, and I think that the one thing I wrote that was a negative, I wrote he needs some work getting off blocks. That wasn't one of the strengths of, you know, what he does. But really, other than that, he can do everything at a very high level for a middle linebacker. And his length and athleticism are just special. The way he runs, he can avoid blockers. He can take them on. And then with that length, Ahmed, you know, my experience playing linebackers, once they start getting over 6'1", you start getting a linebacker like this guy with 6'2 and 33-inch arms. And as athletic as he is, man, all of a sudden throwing the ball over the middle gets a whole lot harder because you're going, damn, he just seems like he's everywhere. He covers so much ground, let alone the length he has. So really impressive football player, and I think a slam dunk top 25 pick.
Yeah, many people noted his playmaking ability, chiseled frame, big legs and ass guy, long arms. You mentioned the wingspan there. Speed player glides from sideline to sideline. One of the positives about him that may be also a negative that I saw noted is that he's willing to take chances. It's almost like he shot out of a cannon on some of these plays, but that can tend to lead to some over-aggressiveness, which I imagine can be toned down perhaps at the next level, and maybe you'd rather have that over-aggressiveness than under-aggressiveness, but it does lead to some missed plays for him when he's going almost too fast.
There's no doubt there is some of that. But, Ahmed, what you said is correct. You'd rather it see that way than a guy who's, like, hesitating and, like, because then you go, oh, man, is that guy, you know, does he know what he's seeing? Is he afraid to get in there and really throw his body around? So, yeah, Murray at times, you know, we have this phrase in the NFL where we go, shoot your gun, okay? I don't like guns, and I don't even want anybody to have them. But we mean shoot your gun as in, like, when you see something, believe it and go. And, you know, go after it. Don't, like, hesitate and, like, oh, wait, did I see the right thing? I'm not sure. What do I do? No, just go, attack. That's what that phrase means. And he does do that. You know, he could tell he reads offensive linemen. He sees a pulling guard. He'll shoot a gap or fly in there, and it will lead to an occasional missed tackle. But, you know, it also led to a lot of tackles for 1 and 2 yard losses as well. And he'll learn that fine line in the NFL to what you're saying. Because the first time he does that and misses and, you know, Saquon Barkley runs for a 90-yard touchdown, he'll go, oh, damn, okay, this is the NFL and I can't be doing that shit as much anymore. I need to be a little more controlled than how I attack the hole. But everything else from a physical standpoint is phenomenal. He's a really good football player.
My old high school baseball coach used to tell us, if you think you stink, just react, which I always up to that point thought thinking was good. I did think thinking was good, but sometimes you can overthink it. You just need to react.
Especially a middle linebacker. You don't want to be thinking too much.
Yes. So he is your number three linebacker. We're into the top two. There is a consensus number one, which makes me think that maybe Chris will want to bump him down to number two because it's what we've seen so far. But you go strictly by the tape. Your number two linebacker in this class, Chris.
Patrick Queen from LSU. All right. That will be my number two guy. So you're going to get your consensus number one. You happy?
Boo. You chickened out again.
What a chicken I am. How dare I? And I want to talk about and make sure you remind me when we get done with this top five, I want to go back and revisit the top three one more time. Okay. Just an overall blanket statement about them. But I mean, Patrick Queen from LSU, linebacker university, freak show university. I mean, oh, what do you mean? Another twitchy, explosive, physical freak at middle linebacker from LSU? I've never heard of that except for last year and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that. It's unbelievable. I don't know where they find these fucking guys. I don't. It's like they have a tree in at the LSU school there on school grounds that like grows prototype physical freak linebackers. It's unreal. I mean, it really is. Now, this guy is a physical freak. He's twitchy as hell. He's fast as hell. He's all over the field, okay? He's a little less than Murray from Oklahoma with his ability to read and react. He does hesitate from time to time. But I don't attribute that to a guy that, you know, like we were talking about a second ago, who's like stupid. He knows what he's seeing. You know, he's certainly not afraid to throw his body around and hit. It's more about, I think this is a guy that just hasn't played a lot. This is really the only year he played middle linebacker and got a ton of snaps and doing all of that. But it's a special, special specimen, Ahmed, when I really break him down. I mean, here's some of the things I wrote. You know, when he knows what he sees and he's confident in it, I mean, his ability to react and shoot the gap or go after a ball carrier, I mean, it's off the charts. It's as good as any middle linebacker in football. Now, like I said, there's moments where I think because of lack of experience, there's some hesitation in this game. But explosive ability, I mean, off the charts, as good as any middle linebacker in football in that department. There's no doubt about it. His quicks, acceleration, he's great in coverage. He has really good hips. He can run with running backs out of the backfield. And, of course, will be able to run with tight ends too. So when I really looked at him, when you talk about, you know, short area quickness, right, Ahmed, like, oh, okay, I think the run's going over here. Oh, wait, let me stop. I got to redirect. It's going over here. He is amazing at that, shuffling down the line of scrimmage and staying square to the line of scrimmage so he can meet the ball carrier in the hole. All of it is just off the charts that way. Really, the only thing I found that was the flaw, like I said, and I attributed a lot of it, was just the, you know, a guy that hasn't played a lot of football all the time. I really looked at that as being some of the biggest negatives. You know, nothing to do with ability, physicality, anything like that. I just think he's got to learn to when to take on a block, when to run around the block, you know, when to trust what you see and when not to trust what you see. And that will come with experience. But, you know, he's a phenomenal football player. He's every bit athletically as gifted as Devin White last year, who was a top five pick or top six pick. He's just not as, you know, nuanced at playing the position quite yet. But either way, the physical traits are there.
Devin White, Deion Jones, Quan Alexander, a lot have come out of LSU. There are superlatives all over the place for Patrick Queen when you read about him. Impressive ability to diagnose the play, like you said. Impressive open field tackler. People love the way he is in coverage. High ceiling, still improving. He really was a breakout player this year for LSU, as you mentioned, and excelled with it, excelled in the college football playoffs. So you know he can rise to the occasion in the big games he was there for. And this too, Chris, which is interesting, you don't always talk about age, but he is one of the youngest prospects in the draft. He does not turn 21 until August. And so even more, perhaps, room to grow there for Patrick Queen.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, again, it goes back to what we were talking about a little earlier, right? Like, these guys are still growing. You know, 3 years from now, he was 6 foot 229 at the combine. 2 years from now, if we come back and we go, hey, Patrick Queen, can we do the combine measurements with you? He'll be 6'2", 240 and chiseled and more of a man, because usually men don't get smaller as they get older. They tend to get bigger, right? Yeah. I mean, I know I'm fighting that, and my belly wants to get bigger.
The last month here, I've expanded.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it's tough when you get set at home and snacks are around everywhere. But, you know, you said it. It really is. The only negatives I look at are experience. That's the only thing. He just needs to play more football, and he'll have a better understanding of the game. But every bit in the class of the guys that we saw drafted in the top 10 last year, Devin White, Devin Bush, he's athletically and physically every bit as gifted as them, just hasn't played as much football and is not quite the players they are. But I think he can certainly reach that point.
Some people saying maybe he has more of a defensive back's body, but that's the changing NFL. You got these hybrid players, and that leads us to your number one linebacker in the class. I'm going to speak for you because I think it's Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson. Really, one of the things I read about him, quote, breaks the mold for what we can expect with a linebacker moving forward. A massive safety who plays linebacker was one of the direct quotes for Isaiah Simmons. Is that what you see?
Yes. I mean, you know, the first thing I wrote down is just specimen. I mean, he's a freaking specimen. He's like a praying mantis with lots of muscles out on the football field. I mean, it's just like it's one of those Ahmed where you turn on the film and you just go, I don't know anything out here, but that guy looks different than everybody else. And then you start to watch him and you go, oh, that's because he is different. He is a freak of nature. You know, and he's not your traditional linebacker. This is a different type of guy to what you're saying. And yeah, there's some free safety ability. I see that. But I think ultimately he's best when he's closer to the line of scrimmage in a strong safety linebacker, just go get the ball type of role. You know, at free safety, because he's so long, you know, he's not what I want to say an unreal accelerator, right? If he's a free safety and there's a deep post going across his face and he's got to flip his hips and turn and run, you know, he's long. There's a little bit more of a gather up speed than you would see from a normal free safety or the elite ones like Antoine Winfield Jr., who could turn and run and be at full speed by the time that second foot's hitting the ground. Isaiah Simmons is not quite that way. Now, in a 100-yard race, he's going to beat all those guys. I mean, he's unbelievable. But, yeah, okay, so I think, hey, the physical ability, I mean, you know it. We see it. He can run down anybody in the sport. It doesn't matter. At 4'3", 238 pounds, you know, his strength for a guy that's a little longer and skinnier looking, it's pretty damn good. I mean, when you want him to set the edge, he can do that. You know, is he a guy that's going to knock off the head of the pulling guard who's coming at him? No, but he's certainly capable of taking him on and stopping him in his tracks and making a play that way too. So, yes, he hasn't played the traditional linebacker spot and honed in at one spot, and that's going to help him with some teams and hurt him with other teams. Because I know I've had friends who tell me and go, yeah, but what position does he scare you at? And I understand that question. I get it. And I mean, scare you as in like, oh, if I was game planning against him, where would I go? Oh, no, I don't know where to see that guy. To me, you know, the answer to that question is a stand-up will linebacker or some type of middle linebacker that you just say, go get the football, okay? And then he, of course, has the flexibility to cover people, you know, play the slot. You could play a 4-3 defense. He could be your will linebacker, and yet he'd be able to run with a lot of the slot receivers in the NFL vertically up the field, let alone when you try to throw a wide receiver bubble screen or do something like that. No wide receiver is going to be able to block him, and then he's going to be able to run down and tackle that wide receiver you're trying to throw the bubble screen to. So he is. This is a different guy. I've never seen anything like this guy, Ahmed.
He played all over the field, and that's what made him obviously versatile. But he also did it really well. He was able to handle it and be elite at all those roles, defensive line, traditional linebacker, out in the slot, wide, some free safety as well. So it will be kind of interesting. Like, what would you rather do with a player like that, a guy that can do it all? There's value in that versatility, or do you just want him to get really, really good at one thing? And the answer may be different from different teams out there, as you noted. So you have Simmons, you have Queen, and you have Murray. Where are they going in this draft? How high are they going, and how closely grouped are those three, you think?
Well, it's a good question. I think all three of those guys are going to go in the top 25 for sure. I do. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if all three of them ended up going in the top 20. You know, I mean, I think these are big-time talents. I think the gap between Queen and Murray and Simmons is a lot closer, though, than – I don't want to just sit here and go, oh, Simmons is so much better than the rest. It's not even close. He's a top five pick, and the other guys are outside the top 10. No, I could see Simmons falling outside the top 10 for a little bit of the reasons we talked about. You know, some teams might just go, I'm not so sure what position he is, and that scares me. You know, I think he's one of those guys that how do I want to say this? If a coach got fired and he had to inherit Isaiah Simmons, they'd be like, oh, man, I get to go coach Isaiah Simmons? That's unbelievable. That's awesome. He's an unbelievable talent. Now, if a coach has to pull the trigger and draft him, I think that'll be a little scarier for most teams to do that because of the things we talked about. But nonetheless, he's a special, special talent. And I think it's very close between all three of these guys as far as, you know, I'm going to give Simmons the edge because of the pure athleticism and the versatility. But, man, I like Queen and Murray a lot. And I think Queen and Murray are very close as football players too. Or I would say Queen is a little bit more of an explosive raw athlete. I would say Kenneth Murray, you know, has played the position more and has better instincts and read and recognition skills than a guy like Queen does too, to make up for maybe that just hair less of athletic explosion, let alone Murray's a bigger human being who I think like 2 or 3 years from now is going to be 250 pounds, 248, something like that, with still being able to move the way he moves. So really interesting group, but all three are freaks of nature. And yeah, Isaiah Simmons to me, Ahmed, like, I don't know where he goes, all right? I don't know. Like, when I look at the top 10, okay, let's just have this conversation. Okay. You know, I don't think the Giants are going to take him at number 4. And I don't think the Lions at number 3 are going to take him either. I don't. You know, they have Kyle Van Noy, right? Did they get Jamie Collins? Am I remembering that correctly? Right? So they got those two guys. You want to double check that for me? So they have those type of guys anyways. Like I said, I don't think the Giants are going to go that way. The team I do look at the top 10 when it comes to the Simmons conversation, would the Los Angeles Chargers go get? Oh, Kyle Van Noy's the Dolphins. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
The Dolphins, yeah. You were right about
Jamie Collins is in Detroit,
yeah,
right?
Jamie Collins, yep.
But I could see the Chargers maybe liking Isaiah Simmons. He's probably the one team in the top 10 that if I had a circle, man, they have a need at the linebacker position. And if you put Isaiah Simmons down on the second level next to Derwin James, who's their strong safety, oh my gosh, that might be the most athletic front six you could ever have. Bosa, Ingram, you know, Linval Joseph, Jerry Tillery, a defensive tackle. And then you got a guy like Simmons and Derwin James down there as like these hybrid can do anything ball hawks. Wow. So that's a team that jumps out to me in the top 10. But I think it is very interesting to see where he ends up. And like I said, will the Minkah Fitzpatrick thing come back to hurt him, where, you know, Minkah was one of those guys. He could play it all. And then we tried to play him at all, and it didn't work out. And then the Steelers said, no, we're going to play him here, and it did work out. So that's what's intriguing about the Simmons conversation.
All right, before we go, you want to throw any love to any honorable mentions out there? I know some people like Troy Dye from Oregon, Willie Gay Jr. from Mississippi State, Jordan Brooks out there from Texas Tech. You like any of those guys?
I do. I mean, Jordan Brooks, for the Texas Tech kid, I really like him. He is a little reckless and misses some tackles, but has a great body and has phenomenal athleticism, okay? So to where he's a guy where, like, I wouldn't be shocked from 4 years from now you said, oh, man, he could be one of the best middle linebackers in the game. He's got that type of potential, but he's in the Big 12. And like I said, you know my worries about the Big 12 at sometimes it's just like flag football. I want to give some love to Malik Harrison, the middle linebacker for the Ohio State Buckeyes. He's your traditional thumper middle linebacker. You know, he's still a good athlete. He doesn't have the greatest hips and the greatest ability to change direction, but a true like 3-4 middle linebacker or a true middle linebacker where you go, oh, you just plug that hole and take on guards and smash mouth football. Let alone he can run you down sideline to sideline. They jumped out to me for sure. Those two, I like them a lot. Logan Wilson of Wyoming, like him, remind me of Kiko Alonso, okay, in a lot of ways. Troy Dye is a player, like you said. You know, the Davion Taylor, and here's another one. Davion Taylor and Akeem Davis Gaither from Appalachian State, those would be the two guys that they're more Cam Chancellor than they are middle linebackers. Like you talked about those guys who are like, are they safeties? Are they linebackers? To me, those guys are more safeties, but intriguing prospects nonetheless. A deeper position than I thought it was going to be when I got into it, but a fun group to watch.
Chris, you've done it again. You've almost looked at every college player that has ever played the game in the year 2020, but we still haven't done offensive line. We got to do offensive line.
We're going to. And I'm there. You know, we're going to hit that on Monday. We're going to hit all the big offensive linemen. So me and you will go through the guards, the tackles, the centers, anybody that's, you know, in that first round, top 40 picks conversation, we're going to hit it all. You nervous? You scared?
That sounded like a lot of players that I need to type into my little OneNote worksheet over here, but I'm up for it. I got nothing else to do.
I know
honestly,
you are.
So,
you got nothing else. Did you change your background today? Or are you in a different room?
No, but I adjusted the lighting. The lighting dipped a little bit, so I'm.
You are good looking in that lighting. Let me tell you, man, you're handsome. Woo, man, look at that smile. How did you get those teeth that white if you only brush once a day? It's unbelievable.
Natural. It's natural. If I was losing them, I'd have to brush more. But since I have good natural enamel, I can just go with one time and they're fine. Chris,
awesome.
Well done again, my friend. Amazing work. This whole past 30 some days here.
Thanks, buddy. You the man. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks for making it fun. Thanks for listening to my bullshit all the time, man. That's what you should be getting paid for if anything. Damn, you gotta listen to me talk so much. I know. Watch your mouth. I'm gonna see you in person again at some point. Watch it. But everybody, Chris Sims, Ahmed Farid, we'll be back on Monday. We got a full week of podcasts next week. Of course, it's going to be centered around the draft and anything that's relevant going on NFL news-wise. But Ahmed, you the man. Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend. Watch some movies. Watch a freaking movie, okay?
I have no excuse.
No excuse.
Yeah.
Godfather report after the draft. I want the report on the Godfather.
Homework.
Okay. All right.
I'll do it.
All right. All right, everybody. Peace out, homies. Be good. Have a good weekend. Stay safe. Listen to the people who know what they're talking about when it comes to COVID-19. We'll see you next week for more Draft Talk. Peace.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. the longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.